Okay, so we have been in the section of the syllabus dealing with the development of wisdom. And so far we've gone through a number of suttas, the Samaditti Sutta, the Alagacchula Sihanada Sutta, the shorter discourse on the lion's roar, the Alagadupama Sutta, the discourse on the snake simile, the Maha Tanha Sankhaya Sutta, the discourse, the greater, the larger discourse on the destruction of craving. All of those suttas are in some way concerned with, you could call it, clarification of view, purification of view, sharpening one's understanding of the Dhamma, avoiding wrong views and gaining right view or right understanding. Now we will come to a number of suttas which deal with the application of this right understanding or right view to the actual development of insight wisdom. Suttas that deal with the development of insight leading to full realization. Of course, in the suttas that we've taken, sometimes the sutta comes to a culmination with the attainment of realization. But in the suttas that we'll be taking over the next few weeks, you could say that the focus or the central point of the sutta is on the development of insight. And the sutta that I'm taking tonight, starting with tonight, gives a very compressed, very compact, and very systematic presentation of the course of practice leading to the development of insight. And I should say, for those of you who might be already familiar with, for example, the systems of the development of insight that one finds in the Visuddhimagga, with the step-by-step series of stages of insight knowledges, the Vipassana Jnanas, one doesn't find any of that in the old suttas. But this is like part of the way in which the Theravada tradition has worked out the development of insight. And different early Buddhist traditions have worked out the process of developing insight in different ways. The early suttas deal basically with what are the insights that one has to achieve and what is the material that one has to work upon to gain insight. And this is what is dealt with in a very compact, very compressed way in the sutta that we're taking tonight, number 148 in the middle length discourses. It's called in Pali the Chaka Sutta, which means the six sixes or the six sets of six. Okay, so the sutta begins when the Buddha is living in Savatthi at Jeta's Grove, and he calls the attention of the monks, and then he says to them, "Monks, I shall teach you the Dhamma that is good in the beginning, good in the middle, and good in the end, with the right meaning and phrasing. I shall reveal a holy life, a spiritual life, that is utterly perfect and pure." Now this opening passage, these opening lines, constitute a description that the Buddha usually uses to describe the Dhamma, the teaching, as a whole. For example, we find this in Sutta number 27. On page 272, paragraph 11, when the Buddha is giving a general presentation of the teaching, so he says, here a Tathagata, that's a Buddha, appears in the world, the accomplished one, that's the Arahant, the fully enlightened one, and so on. Then going down a few lines, he teaches the Dhamma, good in the beginning, good in the middle, and good in the end, with the right meaning and phrasing, and he reveals a holy life that is utterly perfect and pure. There the description is used in relation to the teaching as a whole. But here, in the sutta on the six sets of six, we find the Buddha using that same description in relation to this particular teaching that he's going to set forth right here. And that's very unusual. In fact, I think that this might be the only sutta in the whole Sutta Pitaka that uses this kind of introduction. And so it's a way of giving a special emphasis to the importance of the sutta. Okay, and so then the Buddha asked the monks to listen and attend closely to what he is going to say. Okay, then, as usual, the Buddha sets out his teaching, as I said, in a very systematic way. First, he gives the very concise presentation, setting out what are the six sets of six. There are the six internal bases. We call these the six internal sense bases, the six external sense bases, the six classes of consciousness, the six classes or types of contact, the six types of feeling, the six classes or types of craving. Okay, in a nutshell, these are the six sixes. And all of these six sixes are things that are to be understood, things to be understood with first conceptual knowledge. One has to first know what they are. Then they are the things that are to be contemplated with vipassana jnana, with insight, in order to gain true realization, true understanding of what they are and what their real characteristics are. Okay, now after this short synopsis or condensed presentation, now the Buddha comes to the elaborate presentation, or the elaboration, enumeration. Okay, and this is going to be a progressively expanding enumeration, as you'll see. Okay, first, the six internal bases should be understood. Okay, and so what is the meaning of this? What is meant? Okay, there are now these six internal bases. What are they? The eye base, the ear base, the nose base, the tongue base, the body base, and the mind base. So this is what is meant when it is said the six internal bases should be understood. And that is the first set of six. The sounds, very, very simple. But what is actually meant here by these six bases? We speak about the eye as a base, the ear as a base, and so on. Each of these five physical sense faculties as a base. And what we mean by calling this a base is that this is the sense faculty taken, or we could say the sense organ, taken as a base for the arising of consciousness. That is, the Buddha's teaching is not concerned with a physiological or an anatomical understanding of these sense organs, the way what an ophthalmologist might be concerned with understanding the way the eye functions, the way a physiologist would be concerned with understanding the way these sense organs function. But the Buddha's teaching is concerned with understanding the nature of conscious experience. And conscious experience is always experienced through the senses. The senses in the broad sense of the term, including the mind base, the mind as a faculty. And so when we speak about each of these physical sense bases, the eye, ear, nose, tongue, and body, then we're not concerned with these as merely physical, fleshly sense organs, but as sense organs that function as bases or as faculties for the arising of the corresponding types of consciousness. In the systematic Buddhist philosophy, which is called Abhidharma, what is called the eye base is said to be not the whole physical organ that we call the eye, but it's a special type of subtle matter that exists within the eye that is able to respond to light, color, forms, and to, you could say, to receive color, light, and form and make them available to the mind. And the whole physical organ of the eye, in a sense, is subordinate to that aspect of the eye base. The whole organ of the eye devels or evolves, I'm using modern expression here. The Buddhist Abhidharma didn't speak about the evolution of the eye, but you could say that the whole organ of the eye evolves for the purpose of enabling us to see forms, to see them more distinctly in greater detail. And so the center of the eye, the core of the eye, is that type of matter, material substance that is responsive to light, that absorbs light, and that, again using modern physiological terms, that channels the light into the optic nerve so that it can then be transmitted to the brain and be transformed into visual images. And then what we call the ear base is not this flabby organ here, or flabby piece of flesh that comes out here. This is just a shield or protective shield. But its function is to protect the real ear base, which is something deep inside, which is able to respond to sounds, to pick up sounds and to pick up vibrations of air and to transform them into sounds, or to transmit them to certain portions of the brain where they become transformed into meaningful sounds, or first into audible sounds, and then the audible sounds get interpreted as meaningful sounds. Okay, the nose base is not this protuberance here, which might be long or short, hooked, beaked, pointy, different in different people. This again, it's just a device which protects the real nose base, which is a type of material phenomena somewhere deep up here inside, which is able to receive odors, to pick up odors and respond to them. And then the tongue base is spread out over the fleshly tongue, but the tongue base is actually, in modern terms, we might call it taste receptors spread out over the tongue. And that the taste receptors are what are able to pick up different tastes and then respond to them. And then the body base is spread out over the whole body, both the outer surfaces of the body and also large internal parts of the body. And the body base is that aspect of the skin, the membranes, the tissues, which is able to respond to tactile sensations and to make tactile sensations hard, soft, rough, smooth, heavy, light, to make them available to the mind. Okay, what is called the mind base for Buddhism is not the brain, but it is the mind in the sense of a faculty which is able to, on the one hand, it can pick up the objects of the other five sense faculties. That is, the objects of the other five types of sense consciousness are unique to each of their own types of sense consciousness. Or let's say the objects of the other senses are unique to their own particular base. For example, the eye base can only pick up visible forms. The eye base doesn't pick up sounds or odors or tastes. Or at least, that's my opinion, my experience. some people have said that maybe poets say that, write poems saying that they can see sounds with their eyes, but maybe that's poetic metaphor, but actually we don't see sounds with our eyes, but we see forms with our eyes and we hear sounds with our ears. But the mind base can take the other sense objects, all the sense objects as its own objects, and it also has its own class of objects. Its own class of objects are, you could say, abstract objects, like numbers, for example, not necessarily visible, but they're abstract concepts. Ideas, abstract images, or actually images are always visible, visual, abstract ideas. Okay, so these are the six sense bases, and these are called internal bases, in the sense that they are the sense bases that pertain to our own individual organism, our own body and mind. Yeah.
The word understood.
Yeah.
Is, what's the pali?
Veditabbang. Yeah, Veditabbang.
And is what you just explained how that is meant that they should be understood? Or is that to come?
The way I explained it?
Just now, you explained each sense base. Is that what is... The six internal bases should be understood.
Yeah.
Is that the way they should be understood?
The sutta itself doesn't elaborate on the way they should be understood. Excuse me? Yeah, the sutta doesn't elaborate on the way they should be. The sutta itself will not explain how each sense base should be understood apart from explaining it in terms of non-self, impermanence and non-self, which we're going to come to. But it doesn't give a specific explanation of each particular sense base.
Yeah, when I read it, I took it to be sort of foreshadowing that it should be understood in relation to non-self. But I wasn't really crystal clear on that.
Yeah, I think that's what's intended. But I want to make clear what is meant by things like eye base, ear base, and so on. Of course, these terms themselves would not be clear, say, just to an ordinary reader. And it would seem to me, this is something that I've puzzled about, even how would they have been understood by the Buddha's contemporaries? It seems to me that he must have given explanations of these terms which just have not been preserved. Because he's using a term like ayatana, for the first time, I don't think the term has been used in that sense in Indian literature. Well, there was no literature. All teachings were oral. But I don't think the word ayatana was used in Indian tradition before the time of the Buddha in that sense. So I don't know how his own disciples would have picked up the meaning of that term unless the Buddha himself gave some clarification of what is meant by eye base. This is my opinion, but it seems that if all of these explanations had been included within the text that had to be transmitted orally, it would have been just too much to have been transmitted, and everything would have been lost. And so to keep it simple, the teachings had to be cut down to a kind of bare-bones minimum. And so I think the explanations for these terms were sort of preserved orally, but not as part of the fixed text of the suttas themselves.
You know, if the concept of the mind as a sense was a common idea at that time? You know, Mark often talked about five senses.
I think, yeah, I would say that the idea of the mind as a sense was already part of the Indian culture. This would go back even in the Upanishads before the time, and perhaps even some of the Vedic literature before the time of the Buddha. The mind would have been taken as an independent sense, running parallel to the physical senses.
If the mind isn't the base for the mind, the nervous system,
yeah,
then what is?
Say the question again.
You said that the mind base is not the brain.
Right. The mind base is not the brain, yeah.
Then what is the mind base?
The mind base is not a physical sense organ. The mind base is the mind considered insofar as it is a faculty capable of cognizing its own particular class of objects. Those objects, as we will see, are called dhammas, translated here as simply mind objects. And in the early suttas, we don't find any attempt made to specify what is the physical basis for the mind and for consciousness. In somewhat later literature, a specification is made, and it is said that the heart is the base for mind and mind consciousness. That is in the commentaries. And here the commentaries are drawing upon the common Indian idea of that period, which was the idea that came probably in the Indian medical textbooks. Since when people became mentally disturbed, then they thought that something was wrong with their heart, and so then attempts were made to give some medication that would alter the way the heart functioned with the hope of bringing their mind back to normal. Was there another question? Okay, now we come to the six external bases. Here we have the form base. This is, we call visible form, a visible object. Sound base, simply sounds, odor base, odors, flavor base or tastes, the tactile base, tangible objects, and then the sixth base is called the mind object base. The mind object base includes the class of objects that are specific to the mind faculty or mind base. But these objects are not objects of any of the other senses. So these are the objects that are the unique objects of the mind base. It will include, actually, when we perform any kind of internal act of introspection, we can become aware of our own feelings, our own moods. That those feelings and moods, insofar as they become objects of awareness, are part of the mind object base. Our own thoughts, insofar as we become aware of our thoughts, are part of the mind object base. Any kind of concepts, insofar as we become aware of them, are part of the mind-object base. Okay, and so now we have the second set of six. And now we come to the third set of six. Here, the six classes of consciousness should be understood. And now, the exposition is getting important. And now the Buddha says, with reference to what was this said? Okay, dependent on the I and forms, I consciousness arises. Okay, even this is quite an important statement, and it shows that consciousness is dependent upon, we can call it, a pre-existing world. In other words, even though the world for us with which we're concerned is always a world that is given within consciousness, that is the world of conscious experience, consciousness itself arises on the basis of a pre-existing or a given predetermined material world. The world is not just a projection of consciousness, not just a projection or manifestation of the mind. But states of consciousness arise depending upon two things, any state of consciousness. It arises depending upon an internal base, and it arises depending upon an external base. For I consciousness, the internal base is the I, the external base is forms. Ear consciousness arises depending on the ear and sounds, nose consciousness on the nose and odors, tongue consciousness on the tongue and flavors, body consciousness on the body and tactile sensations. So these five types of consciousness, the five types of sense consciousness, arise each one depending on its own specific sense organ, its own specific internal sense base, and its own specific object, that is, the external sense base. And usually our experience is run all together, so it just seems like one, we call it, conglomerate whole. One big block. But if one pays careful attention to one's experience, one will see how it is actually constituted of individual frames of consciousness. But let me elaborate on that after I come to the sixth type of consciousness. Okay, the sixth type of consciousness is called manovijnana, mind consciousness. And this arises dependent on the mind and mind objects. Maybe for this one it's useful to have the Pali on the board. Okay, manovijnana, that is mind consciousness, arises depending on mano, that is the mind, and what is called dhamma, which means, is translated as mind objects. It really means anything that can become an object of the mind, not included among the other five types of sense objects. But this is where manovijnana, mind consciousness, is different from the other five types of consciousness. Each of the other five types of consciousness takes only one object, its own specific object. But mind consciousness, mano-vijnana, working through mano, the mind base, is able to take the objects of the other types of consciousness as well. How is this so? What are some examples of this? For example, give an example. Where are my glasses? Okay, I don't need them. I can see well enough without them. Okay, Pat is wearing one kind of blouse. Or is it a sweater? I can't make that out without the glasses. And Joanne is wearing one kind of... I can't make out whether it's a blouse or sweater. It's a blouse. And Chi is wearing one. They're all blue. Now... I think James is wearing a shirt also. It's a little too far back from my vision, but I think it's a blue also. Now, they're all different shades of blue, but I'm using the eye, and eye consciousness brings in the color. Then mano, the mind, picks up on that color that is brought in through the eye consciousness. Mano, the mind base, picks up that. Ah, here they are. Okay, now I can see much better. I was right, they're all shades of blue. Okay, so this helps my mano a lot. We should call them mono glasses. Okay, so the mono picks up on the color which is brought to it by chakuvijnana, by the eye consciousness. The mono picks that up and is able to determine that even though these are different shades of blue, but mano distinguishes that they're all blue. And then mano vijnana, mind consciousness, becomes aware that these are all blue. Mano forms the judgment that they're all blue. And mano vijnana is the consciousness of their all, that they are all blue. And yet, mano and manovijnana, mind base and mind consciousness, are here functioning through the mind, they're functioning through the eye as a door and taking color or form as their object. So they're building up upon visual cognition, upon eye consciousness. Or suppose you hear a melody, or let us say you hear a series of notes, musical notes. Now, its ear consciousness is what picks up that series of notes. But ear consciousness is not able to turn that series of notes into a melody. Ear consciousness, its only function is to pick up sound. But ear consciousness doesn't know anything about the meaning of sounds. It doesn't have any ability to synthesize sounds and to make them into a meaningful whole. But if you hear da, oh, I was never a good singer. Da 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 da. What was it? What? How did she do it? Excuse me? That's the basic melody of Ode to Joy. Yeah. Okay, so what you do, what happens there is ear consciousness picks up a series of sounds, just one sound after another, after another, after another, and then mind consciousness is what synthesizes these sounds, or actually it's the mind base synthesizes these sounds, joins them together in a very complex process, going back and forth between mind base and ear consciousness very, very rapidly. And then it is mind consciousness which is aware of this all taking place. And it is at the level of the mind consciousness, manovijnana, that the recognition takes place. Ode to Joy. Ear consciousness is very stupid. It doesn't know Mozart from Elvis Presley from Ode to Joy. Don't know nothing. And not only doesn't ear consciousness not only isn't it able to distinguish between different types of music, but I'll tell you something even more startling about ear consciousness. Ear consciousness is not even able to understand my words while I'm speaking. Your ear consciousness isn't understanding my words. Ear consciousness doesn't understand any words at all. Whether it's Chinese, Greek, English, ear consciousness, it's all in the same boat as far as the sounds go.
As you're speaking, I'm focusing on only the bass tones. I'm picking up on the vibration of your voice.
Yeah.
What's that? Is that still mono because I'm recognizing that it's lower?
Wait, this is getting complicated. Let me go on. Then you could ask the questions later. That question later. It's deflecting me away from the point I want to make. Okay, what recognizes meaning is mono in conjunction with manovijnana. So it's the ear consciousness picks up the sounds, and then ear consciousness picks up sound quickly, very quickly. It flashes that sound to mano, picks up another sound, flashes it to mano, picks up another sound, flashes it to mano. All of this is going on very quickly. And then a synthesis takes place, and then drawing upon reserves of past experience, these sounds get understood as meaningful sounds. And then the different words spoken get merged together into a meaningful sentence. And all of this is taking place so quickly that you could sit there taking notes, not realizing that in your stream of consciousness, this flashing going back and forth is taking place. You don't have to wait one iota of a split second thinking, let me just wait until the mind moves back from mano to the air consciousness. But it's all just going back and forth at almost the speed of light, maybe faster than the speed of light. Okay, now what was the question?
I was sort of inquiring if one can actually be aware of any of the other kinds of consciousness separate from manavana. And I was focusing, as you were speaking, I was picking up on the bass tones in your voice.
I see.
Vibration.
Yeah.
And I was trying to see if that was simply ear consciousness, or if in the recognition that it was a low...
What I would say is that when one puts one's mind into a state of an extraordinary degree of openness and sort of an extraordinary degree of mindful openness, one comes closer and closer to the bare sensory awareness. Whether one can get back to that to those individual moments of the bare sensory experience, this is a matter of some uncertainty. I'm uncertain how to answer. It depends on which model one is using. Like if one uses the Abhidhamic model, that moment of sensory experience is so brief that it's almost impossible to get there. But I think if one uses I think the suttas are speaking at a more, call it phenomenological or more experiential level. And so by simply keeping at the level of a mindful openness to one's immediate experience, one will be at a level of bare sensory experience. But the overlays, or let's say the alternation with mental interpretation, is going on very, very rapidly. But to the degree that one develops this mindful openness or this open mindfulness, one comes closer and closer to the bare sensory level of sensory experience. And then what I wanted to say, let me just continue, is that one of the aspects of experience that becomes clear through the development of mindfulness is the way this apparent unbroken continuity of experience that we ordinarily take for granted gets broken up or transformed into a sequence or succession of discrete moments of experience, so that one comes to distinguish the successive moments of seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, and the mindful or the mind, the mental cognition of them. So that, for example, when eating, one will be able to distinguish the moment of tasting a particular food, and then tasting at the bare sensory level, and then recognizing the taste, the moment of enjoying the taste, a moment of desiring more of that particular taste. When seeing an object, one will be able to distinguish the moment of making the initial contact with the object, then the moment of recognizing the object, then one will distinguish the moment of when that visual cognition stops, then the next moment of consciousness arises, which might be an occasion of hearing something, and so on. And so in this way, the flow of experience gets turned into a series of discrete moments of consciousness. And then each of these moments of consciousness will have its arising and falling away, its arising and passing. Okay, Peter.
I was just wondering how this related. Well, you were talking about the mind consciousness and saying how, for instance, we perceive individual sounds. And these are each moments of mind consciousness, but they're higher concepts.
Yeah, higher level, yeah.
I'm just wondering how this discussion of both, you know, the different levels, but also the separation between sense, like ear consciousness and mind consciousness, how that relates to we read in, this, in the herd, there's only the herd, and the sea, only the sea.
Yeah.
How does that instruction relate to this understanding of sense consciousness? Is that saying, you know, when it says in the herd only the herd, there's only the herd, is that saying there's only the ear consciousness, or is it talking about there's just a lower rather than a higher level of concept?
Yeah, the instruction is actually saying, in the seen, for you, there will be only the seen. In the heard, there will be only the heard. In the sensed, that is sensed through the other sense faculties, there will be only the sensed. In the cognized, or what is known, there will be only the known.
So is that relating to this discussion of the different consciousnesses, or is that talking more conceptually?
Well, this is a kind of injunction or an advice, instructions for practice. It's not making a statement about what there is, but the way a person should train. And so the point of the instruction is that the person should train so that they are not elaborating upon what is seen, heard, sensed, and cognized or known, not elaborating upon it with elaborations which are arising from the defilements or the distorting tendencies of the mind. In other words, don't distort what is seen, heard, sensed, and cognized. Don't distort it in terms of mine, I, and self, or in don't distort it in ways dictated by craving, conceit, and wrong views, or in ways dictated by greed, aversion, and delusion. And so it's a way of keeping to the bare one's attention to the bare sensory experience as closely as possible in the initial stage in order to watch and see the way the mind is tending to distort the sensory experience and to project its own defiled interpretations upon the sensory experience.
So it seems that's taking it out of the discussion of consciousness and into these other sixes, these later sixes, like feeling and craving.
Especially, yeah.
Okay, so past,
yeah.
Yeah,
it's not the theoretical explanation of what takes place, but it's an injunction or a practical instruction of how a person should train. It says, itti siki tabbang, that is how you should train. Any further questions? Okay, please.
I noticed you translated, going back to paragraph 3, the six internal bases should be understood as opposed to these six internal bases should be understood. So we understand that he's saying these are the six internal bases, there are no other six. I mean, there are no other internal bases, and the same with the rest of the sets of six. These six classes of the six classes of consciousness should be understood, meaning that there are no other classes of consciousness, or feeling, or craving. In other words, we understand this 36 as all inclusive, or as a subset that's being highlighted for the discussion.
Well, I think as far as human experience goes, there are just these six types of consciousness. I don't think the statement is intended to exclude the possibility that other beings might have other types of consciousness. Insects might have antenna consciousness, but we don't have any idea what that might be like. But the Buddha's not...
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Can you think of some type of consciousness?
Without wanting to get into big run-up discussions, I've just encountered debates over the experience of nirvana. There has to be a consciousness involved for an arahant.
Yeah, even the experience of nirvana will be a type of mano-vijnana, a mind consciousness.
Okay. Yeah. That arises and ceases?
The experience of nirvana will be a consciousness that arises and ceases, yeah. It's, nirvana itself doesn't arise and cease.
Right, I'm just talking about the consciousness.
Yeah.
Okay.
Any further questions? Okay, if no further questions, then we'll stop here and then continue next week with the six classes of contact. Okay, we end with the sharing of the merits. We share the merits with the deities who protect the Dhamma, the Devas, and the Nagas, the dragon spirits, with the Buddhas, that is, the forceful spirits, and with all beings, wishing that all beings will be well, happy, and free from suffering and affliction. Akasata ca bhumata devanaga mahidika Panyantang anumoditva Chirang rakantu sasanang Akasata ca bhumata Devanaga mahidika Panyantang anumoditva Chirang rakantu desanang Akasata ca bhumata Devanaga mahidika Panyantang anumoditva Chirang rakantu mang parang Etavata ca amhehi Sampadang punya sampadang Sabbe deva anumodantu Sabba sampati siddhya Etavata ca amhehi Sampadang punya sampadang Sabbe bhuta anumodantu Sabba sampati siddhya etavata ca amhehi sampadang panya sampadang sabbe sata anumodantu sabba sampati siddhya bhavagupadaya avici hetato etantare satakai upapanna rupiya rupicha